Hi, this is Jim DeBacchus from the left, and to my friend, State Representative Greg Hughes.
I'm on the right, and I gotta tell you, Jim, if there was anyone I had to sit and listen to say things that don't make any sense, it is my good friend Jim DeBacchus from the State Senate, Chairman of the Democrat State Party.
And I am Natalie Gochner, in the middle, and this is both sides of the aisle. A lively, sometimes witty, maybe even informative conversation about politics, policy, and current issues facing the state of Utah. We'll attempt to help you answer the important questions facing residents of this state and prove that Republicans and Democrats can sit in a small room and have a meaningful conversation. This week, we'll cover the federal government shutdown, the new nomination for lieutenant governor, and Medicaid expansion. I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle, a weekly debate over politics, policy, and current issues facing the state of Utah, featuring voices representing the right, the center, and the left. On the right side, we have Greg Hughes, and on the left, we have Jim DeBacchus. And speaking for the common sense middle, well, that would be me. On today's show, we'll tackle federal government paralysis, the lieutenant governor pick, and Medicaid expansion. Greg, set this up for us. We've got Utah senators and congressmen back there with a government shutdown. What do you say?
Well, you know, you have Senator Lee playing a major role nationally in this shutdown. But locally, people are feeling the effects everywhere, whether it be national parks, whether it be WIC, the WIC program, Women, Infants, and Children. This is being felt everywhere. And I think that the disappointing part of all this is we see a beltway that simply cannot work together. And I don't think you can say that that is a poor president being picked on by a Republican Party or a Republican House. I think there's enough blame to go around, but you got to have a president willing to talk. And I think he's drawn plenty of lines in the sand as of late.
Jim, we have a president who's causing us some trouble here in Utah. Our parks are closed. We've got federal employees who aren't able to show up at work. This is hurting the Utah economy.
Well, we certainly have the problem, and we certainly have complete dysfunction in Washington. Greg and I agree on that. I think every reasonable person in the country agrees on that. But what the Republicans have done is said, we don't want Obamacare, and we are willing to let the United States of America financial system completely collapse, as well as taking the chance that the entire economic world order to collapse, because we don't want Obamacare. Get over it. It is the law of the land. There's nothing that Republicans can do about it. If they want to change it, change it. We have a system. But right now, at this moment, to put the whole future economic system of the world at risk because they don't like Obamacare, Mike Lee, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Greg, he's pretty passionate.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that sounds great. If the facts didn't match the issue here. Jim, let me tell you something. Presidents of this country, as well as Congress, have had showdowns before. This is not the first time there has been the threat of or the worry of a government shutdown. But unique to this situation, you have a president that will not enter into any negotiations, unlike a recent book that's been written by Chris Matthews, who remarked that tax increases passed by Jack Kemp wanted to be reversed by the Democrats and by Speaker Tip O'Neill. It was the law of the land. It was coming. And there were negotiations, and there was an agreement met so that government shutdown would be avoided that resulted in $3 of cut for every tax cut that was coming being eliminated. That's cooperation. That's leadership. And you're not seeing it from this president today.
You guys are sounding a lot like the guys back in the Beltway. Jim?
Throw me anywhere, Natalie, but not there.
Yeah, me either.
I don't want to be in that Beltway. But look, if you, Greg, and your cohorts like Mike Lee will say, you know what, we are willing to take this chance of throwing the country completely into a depression in order to kill Obamacare, and that's what we're doing. This is just a negotiating position because we want that president at the table, then at least have the guts to admit it and say, yep, we hate Obamacare so much that we are willing to throw the whole country into a depression.
Conversely,
that's all I ask.
Conversely, Jim, I would say to you, for a president to not enter negotiations with the Republican-controlled Congress, as presidents before him have always done, he is the one that is deciding to bring this to the brink, because he is not, you know as well as I do, we're both state legislators. Where you begin negotiations seldom is where you end. Those negotiations need to happen. This is not a dictatorship. You have to have the kind of conversations that have happened between Congress and the executive branch years past. You need to do it now, and he needs to get over it and really sit there and meet with the speaker and do what Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan in the past have done. Your president needs to learn that.
6 years of negotiation. Both houses of Congress passed this. The president signed it. It went to the Supreme Court. It's the law of the land. If you want to negotiate, if you want to change it, if you want to amend it, if you want to build something new, fine. But don't grab the country hostage. You put a gun to their head and say, unless you kill Obamacare now, the country is economically going off the cliff.
Jim, you're ignoring the facts. Gentlemen. You had Jack Kemp tax cuts that were law of the land, and you had a president willing to reconsider. That's what we're talking about. You have an Obamacare that has exempted unions, exempted businesses, exempted Congress itself, but yet is landing on a middle class, and there is a discussion to be had about that.
Greg, and I'll stand by this notion that this sounds like classic overreach by both the Tea Party and the Democratic-led administration. Our parks don't need to be closed. They haven't been closed in past administrations that were Democrats when this happened. So we've got to get to the table and start solving problems. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. After the break, we'll talk about the selection of Spencer Cox as our new lieutenant governor. Stay tuned. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, representing the productive middle. I'm joined by Jim DeBacchus on the left and Greg Hughes on the right. We've been talking about the federal government shutdown. I've listened to both Greg and Jim, and I just got to ask you, Jim, how do we get on top of our spending problem?
I don't agree with the way you phrase that, Natalie.
It was perfectly reasonable.
When it comes,
I'm not surprised.
When it comes to spending, it's clear who's in control and who's out of control. For a little example, here in the state of Utah, Utah Republican Party announced this week that they were $80,000 in the hole for their state spending, and they're going to try to charge all the local county parties to pay off the bills of the state Republican Party. The state Democratic Party has $312,000 in the bank, and that's the way Utah Democrats are. We pay our bills, we roll up our sleeves, we're not ideologues like Mike Lee that come in with these outrageous demands, make a spectacle of themselves, have no exit strategy, and are there full bore to do nothing but spend money on their projects.
I have not seen this president put forward an entitlement reform that will take care of this country long term. Greg?
Well, look, that's a unique analogy, taking the state parties of this state and somehow construing what's going on nationally. But let me tell you, there's a saying. It's real simple. When you're in a hole, quit digging, okay? There was a time, and it wasn't that long ago, where we paid attention to the amount of money entering the Treasury versus what we're spending. If we think that this shutdown has been painful, if we've seen inconvenience or worse, imagine when you can't keep printing money in the basement. Imagine when those bondholders in other countries, China and others, don't see the value, because currency is all perception now. There's no gold backing it up anymore, Jim. What happens if the planet believes that the money we're printing isn't worth the paper it's written on? That day will be much more painful than what we're seeing now, and there has to be an acknowledgement. You can't keep doing what you're doing now. When do we get there?
I just got to think that the productive middle here is when both sides of each party come together and basically say, we've got to start changing entitlements. That's where all the spending is that's a problem out in the future, and that's what this showdown is all about.
When I hear each party talk about cutting things that are precious to their base, that's when I'm going to believe we're actually there. When Democrats start saying, we need to make serious changes in Social Security and in Medicaid, we need to, and when I hear Republicans start talking about, maybe we don't need those new fighters, and maybe we need to begin looking at defense programs, that's when we really can sit down and solve this problem. But that needs to not happen in the Mike Lee bullying kind of ideological, it's my way or the highway, I'm going to hold the whole country hostage kind of atmosphere.
And let's be clear, we've got a debt ceiling deadline where we run out of borrowing capacity in this country by October 17th. So the moment in time is coming, Greg.
And it will. And let me tell you, as far as the, and you did touch a sensitive spot with me. When we talk defense, go up to Hill Air Force Base. They're flying fighters around that were built in 1987. It's hard for me to compare some of those expenditures and what's happening there with the kind of growth, not only in entitlements, but in government generally. Now, I agree with you, Jim, that we have to look at where this money's going. Entitlement spending is the bulk of this national budget and its deficit. We have to get there. But every time anyone talks about reforming that, the reason it's never going to be done is it's too good of a campaign phrase to beat the guy talking entitlement and scare our seniors and scare those that need those entitlements into voting for the other guy. As long as it is such a weapon in a campaign, I don't think you're going to see statesmen step forward.
Let's wrap this up, Jim, with you giving the last word. But I'll just say as we do that, that it does feel like there is a permanent campaign. A permanent campaign in both parties. And as the political moderate here, I want to draw from the best ideas of both party. And I'm asking both parties to start solving problems.
I have a dream.
This is not you.
You
I've heard this before. We've heard this.
And that is that Reid and McConnell and Pelosi and Boehner and the president get in a big plane, head to Guantanamo. And when they come back with a short-term plan, a five-year plan, and a 10-year plan that they've talked to all of their caucuses, and they agree that our budget is going to be balanced in 15 years. Here's the way we're going to do it. Here's all the cuts. The markets around the world would go crazy with that kind of stability in the United States of America. And it could happen, but
right.
The political
will isn't
there.
Greg, I told him he got the last word there.
I just want to know, Gitmo, you want this negotiation going on? Gitmo, is there waterboarding going on here?
What, exactly.
Why there? Why did you pick that place?
That's exactly where our politicians need to go. Jeez. Out of the posh Washington, put them down in
all
Gitmo.
Right. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, and I'm joined here by Greg Hughes of the Utah House of Representatives and Jim DeBacchus with the State Senate. We had big political news this week. Spencer Cox was named as the nominee for lieutenant governor of our state. I want to hear, Greg, is this a good pick?
Absolutely, great pick. Let me tell you, the things that I thought that the governor needed to do, I didn't know any more than what the papers were reporting, but there was a lot of talk about the governor looking within his own office. If you look at his chief of staff, Derek Miller, an incredible asset to that administration, but one he already has. You look at any member of that administration, and they're already banging the boards for this governor, and you don't add anything to an administration. This gave the governor an opportunity to add something he might not have or replace something that Lieutenant Governor Greg Bell brought, a relationship and a strong relationship with our state legislature. Spencer Cox was a mayor, a city council member, a mayor, as well as a county commissioner in San Pete. He has those relationships with political jurisdictions. And finally, he has a great relationship with delegates. And I think the grassroots of the Republican Party will see this younger, more spirited member of that administration. It will energize the base. And I think it clearly points to a governor who doesn't plan to leave anytime soon. And it makes that administration stronger.
Great points. I would agree with you that he brings a lot of local government experience, an elected official, and what a big win for rural Utah. Jim.
You know, I like Spencer Cox. I don't know him that well. We've met a couple of times. Seems bright, but...
I knew there was a but coming.
Give me a break. You got Greg Bell, truly one of the wise men of the state, seasoning in the Senate. Greg was in the House. He knew how the process worked. Cox is a freshman. Bright lawyer. But you know what? The governor doesn't have a lot of people with any depth in that circle around him. They're not giving him very good advice. The governor needs frank, honest, decent discussion, and to replace Greg Bell with a lightweight freshman who may well grow into the job was good, but I think you hit it right. I think that he was picked for the delegates because the governor is waiting for Becky Lockhart to roll in. It was the wrong choice,
Greg,
but not a bad
Greg,
man.
Greg, I hate to say it, but this sounded like a predictable reaction from Jim, and I'll just say I started that by saying he doesn't know Spencer Cox well, and I think from that answer he demonstrated that.
Yeah, you know, I would be disappointed, though, if Jim didn't have a response like that, because it's so easy to retort. The issue is this. This guy, he has a young family. This is a young state. Natalie, and you want someone who understands and has a touch and a feel for what families are experiencing. Spencer brings that. He brings so many things to the table. It's an incredible pick. He is young, admittedly, but that is an advantage to that administration, not a disadvantage.
Who's going to stand up to Gary Herbert? You know, Gary is a ditherer. Every decision he has to make, it's weeks and months and committees and reports and more money and more reports. The guy can't make a decision. He needs people around him with a little gray hair and a little wisdom. Cox is a good guy, maybe a good future governor, but give me a break. The governor should have picked somebody with some gravitas that could speak truth to power. Gary Herbert wants people that run away
quickly
from power.
And
a Republican truth to power. Look, some of the names I heard, State Senator Jerry Stevenson, they look like they were born from the same mom, okay? They look like the same guy. You don't want two guys that you can interchange anywhere in a room. Have some difference and some diversity within that administration. Beautiful pick. I would be disappointed, like I said, if Jim thought otherwise.
You want some diversity? Get somebody really smart.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, and I'll just end this segment by saying that I think it was a great pick, and I'm excited about the prospects of having a young thinker like Spencer Cox in that second seat. We've been talking about the lieutenant governor pick. Stay tuned. Our next segment, we'll be talking about Medicaid expansion. My name is Natalie Gochner. Welcome to KCPW's new program on Utah politics, Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm a political moderate, which means I like to take the middle position. But I'm joined today on the left by Jim DeBacchus.
Glad to be here, Natalie.
Jim is chairman of the state Democratic Party and a state senator. On the right side of the aisle is Greg Hughes. Greg, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Greg is a legislator and also chairs the Utah Transit Authority Board. We are going to talk about Medicaid expansion. The clock is ticking. January 1, 2014, our state would be eligible for full Medicaid expansion, which would put somewhere around 130,000 Utahns into a health insurance program. The governor has expressed his desire to hold off on the decision. It's looking like we're not going to be expanding Medicaid anytime soon. Greg, why would we deny this many people health insurance coverage that is paid for completely by the federal government?
Look, this is an issue that certainly pulls on your heartstrings. Here's the danger. You have a state legislature that is required by its constitution to balance the budget every single year. You have right now, but only temporarily for 3 years, a great federal contribution to this expansion. However, after 3 years, it goes away. That kind of uncertainty for lawmakers who are required to balance budgets does not bring comfort. It is not an area, and when you look at the climate going on in Washington, there's not a lot of confidence going on right now. Taking that three-year deal with no understanding of how we're going to make it all work beyond there is a risk.
A little unsettling.
It's a risk that I think lawmakers are unwilling to take.
Jim, I think I know what you're going to say. Please.
Look, this is not federal money. Utahns are going to pay that tax. We're sending that back to Washington, and Washington has a check for $433 million that arrives January 1st to pay for health care for 130,000 of the poorest Utahns. And Governor Herbert dithers. He's been dithering for the last year. He still can't make up his mind. Governor, take some advice. Take the money. This is an economic impact equal to Hill Air Force Base. We're paying the money. Take it for 3 years. It's $1.2 billion. If it is the end of the world, like Glenn Beck says, fine. We will have at least covered people for 3 years. This is not a tough decision.
I don't know how to retort that. That's exactly why you wouldn't want to do it. If it takes us off the edge of the cliff in 3 years, so be it. Really? Really? We can't do that. That is not. Look, the confidence that this kind of funding from the federal government is going to continue uninterrupted, I don't know how anyone, absent their head in the sand, thinks that this is going to happen. We have got to protect people. Yo-yoing benefits doesn't do anyone any favors long term.
Greg, perhaps you saw that Governor Chris Christie took this money.
I did.
What do you make of that? Because there's a Republican who's also trying to mind the fiscal coffers well, but he's willing to take the money because of the benefits to his
residents. Well, the
residents.
Cynic in me says he's running for governor this year, and he's in a very blue state and wants to make sure he stays in that office. And I think that short term, as Jim described, I think there is a short term benefit. And if you're running for reelection, that dovetails well with a very short term goal of being reelected. However, you're going to find that we in the state of Utah are going to look a little bit longer term. This is why the Pew Institute recognizes Utah as one of the best-run states in the country. We're not going to go take that chance, I would hope, not knowing what the world looks like beyond those 3 years.
Jim, Greg makes a great case about our fiscal responsibility in this state.
Jan Brewer, the governor of Arizona, Governor Scott, the Republican governor of Florida, this is not some unpaid-for benefit. Utahns are sending the money. And that money, that $400 million, is sitting back there. And Jan Brewer in Arizona and the governor of Nevada and all of those other states are going to take Utah's money if we don't take it.
Please, we can't forget the segments we've just discussed. There's a debt limit ceiling. There is not money sitting anywhere. There is a country spending more than it brings in. And we complain about this in Washington, about the live today for tomorrow we die and the kind of reckless spending that's gone on. How do we repeat that in this state, knowing from the examples of even other countries, Greece, Spain, look at it, you can't do this.
Very good. We are going to wrap this up by giving our gripe of the week. I'll start by just saying that the name Summit used to mean something. It is possible to convene people without calling it a summit. Jim, just a few seconds.
My rant is for our Utah legislators that are so strong ideologically, we can't afford to pay for health care for 130,000 poor Utahns, but they've got their own paid for, and it's a pretty good plan.
And Greg.
Natalie, I just rant nonstop. My rant today, and it's probably my rant every day, but I'm going to reserve it for today. There is a conspiracy in the city of Salt Lake to put everybody on a bicycle. Okay, there. Every single intersection is a red light. Every kiosk that you'd put your money in to try and park legally thwarts you every time you try to park in this city. Mayor Becker, I love the man. I served in the legislature with him. He wants me on a bicycle, and I say no.
You heard it here. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Thank you for joining us.